Mall. I'm sitting in the chair temporarily because Alex isn't able to be here. So the first item on the agenda is to elect a temporary chair. Do we have any nominations?
Since we already have somebody in the chair, I'm nominating Dolly.
I'll definitely second that.
Oh, thank you. Your turn next time, mate. Okay.
Everyone in favour of that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Thanks. Okay.
Right. I'm going to move swiftly on. Do we have any public speakers?
No.
Apologies.
I've had apologies from Councillor Fred Cagill and Councillor Alex Sadiq.
Okay. And the minutes of the last meeting. Do we have a proposer to accept those? David, I think, and that's David Poor proposed and Mark seconded. Okay, all in favour?
Oh,
accepting those minutes.
Thank you.
Good. Matters arising. Do we have any matters arising?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Welcome, Cherise. Glad you're here. Declarations of pecuniary interest. Does anybody? Yes, David.
Yes, information and pecuniary interest in the grant application for the hive, since I know most of the staff.
So that's a personal interest rather than a financial interest. Yeah,
yeah.
That's fine. Okay.
Anybody else? Well, I do because I am a recipient of. Money from the festival as a performer in the festival.
Okay.
That's for my band.
Can I just declare you have personal interest? Because I've had, not to do with the application, but in previous things, I've had lots of meetings with the Heartstroke Space people.
Right. Okay. That's the high. Okay, so I think mine's pecuniary, but if everybody's happy for me to continue in the meeting, it's a very minor interest. Okay, do we have any items in part two?
No.
No, so we don't need to exclude the press and public, and they're not here anyway. Right, report from the RFO, Responsible Financial Officer.
Okay, so in terms of budgetary control, we can have a look at the detailed income and expenditure reports in a minute, but there are very few cost centres that are over budget, as you'd expect at this time of year. We've only received the first half year precept payment, but those budget lines that we're expecting to be over, in every case, we have pre-planned to take that over-expenditure out of reserves, so it's not technically over-expenditure, it's just coming out of a different pot of money. But that is the Visit Exmouth expenditure, where the income received was in the prior year, it went into reserves and it's now being used to fund some work in the current financial year. The purchase of the tablets for councillors, computer equipment, that was agreed we would take that out of reserves. CCTV, these are the ongoing payments for the monitoring services by Tor Bay District Council. That's been agreed to come out of reserves. And some of the work that Zoe's been doing on the Climate and Ecological Fund, the Sea Serpent, some of the work around the Eco Hub, and planning application fees, etc. That's all been agreed that we would take that out of reserves as well. There's some expenditure on the beach wheelchair fund as well, which will come out of reserves. So all those adjustments will be made at year end, but obviously the impact on the income and expenditure reports for current year will show that there's an overspend, but actually it's budgeted to be handled that way. In terms of the bank reconciliation, we are Currently, we've got just over £2 million held in various accounts that we've got. That is broken down into general reserved, earmarked reserves, community infrastructure levy, and working revenue. Windows are closed, aren't they?
I thought it was somebody's phone. I thought, oh, it's another embarrassing ringtone.
I think they're all closed, so strange. Anyway, the balances in the three bank accounts that we hold are on the report. We've still got £800,000 invested in the CCLA Public Sector Deposit Fund. So total monies held, as I say, is just over £2,179,968.97. It's held in the three bank accounts and the Public Sector Deposit Fund. So I suppose the thing to note there is that the working revenue of £159,242.54 is effectively what's left of our half-yearly precept payment. So we will get our next precept payment at the beginning of September, because it's paid in two halves, one in April and one in September. So that sort of says to me, actually, by the time you take out, I don't know, probably 100,000 or so of payments that we will make in August, that indicates to me that, you know, we're pretty, our budgeting's been pretty good this year, because, you know, there's not going to be a huge amount left over from our working revenue at the end of August when we receive our second precept payment. So that's a good indicator, I think, of the budgeting. So in terms of payments made, there's also a report there that says how much we've expended between April and July. It does fluctuate, fluctuates naturally depending on invoice cycles, etc. And then in terms of funds held on behalf of others, we're still sitting on all these residual pots of money. Coast Hopper Fund, Trees for the Avenues, Garth Gibson Fund, Millennium Wood, Brixington Improvement Group, Beach Wheelchair Project, and the Mayor's Charity. And again, they will all be sorted out at year end. They're held in ledger accounts, so they'll all be sorted out at year end. In terms of the charitable trust funds, we haven't had a trust fund working party in this civic year, but the balances that we are holding are on the report. So that's for the William Adams Westwood Trust, the Exmouth Projects Trust, and the Barrett Bequest Fund. And all of those funds are held in the COIF Charity Deposit Fund accounts. And you will be mindful that we've been trying to divest ourselves of the US shareholdings. That is still ongoing. We've still got some US denominated shares in Keurig Dr. Pepper and in Kraft Heinz. It's proving really tiresome to try and sell those shares and convert them into sterling and then invest them in the 7IM account that we've opened. So the 7IM account was opened in October last year. It's got, we invested £32,000 in it. We haven't had an updated statement. I think it's been sent to Lynn Elson's house and is on our way to us. But obviously the plan is when we manage to sell down those other US dollar shares, and the proceeds will be invested in the 7IM fund as well. So then it will be a completely sterling denominated investment fund. We won't have all these strange US conversion rates to take account of every time. And we've still got £7,000 in national savings bond stocks, which is again a legacy of the William Adams Westwood Trust Fund. So that's the RFO summary report. If anybody's got any questions.
Thanks for that.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, it's just a question on the Millennium Wood and the Trees for the Avenue. I haven't spoken to Mark about the Trees for the Avenue.
Taylor.
Brandy Taylor. I mean, obviously she's aware that that money is still there. Would it be acceptable for that 45, I think it's £45, something like that.
Something like that.
For it to be transferred for a tree to be planted somewhere else?
Yes, I mean, those little sums of money are, you know, they're a bit of a nuisance, to be honest with you, because they just sit there on our balance sheet and, you know, they sit there year in, year out. So I do think we need to do something with them. I mean, if you could speak to Brenda and ask if she'd be agreeable for that money, because it came out of her locality budget, if she would be agreeable for us to buy a tree to plant in, I don't know, Fir Park or something. The trees for the avenues, obviously, those were donations that were collected from avenues residents. I think it was through Tara. So I wonder if we might be able to ask Tara, perhaps Mark could do that. Likewise, if they'd be happy for us to purchase a tree. I know there was some debate about whether trees that were damaged during the recent storm, whether they could be replaced, but I don't think we'll get permission from Devon County Council to replant trees on the highway.
If I may, Chair.
Yes,
go ahead, Mark. When I looked at that amount, I recognised it several years ago. And I was going to propose, I think Lisa's suggestion about raising it with Tara, I think it's a very good one. What I was proposing I would do, since I live is to actually have a scoot around and see if there are any trees that need replacing in the autumn. I'm aware that there is certainly one hit that I know because the agreement with Highways, as I had mentioned before, was that we could only use existing hits so that there was no interference with services that might lie beneath. Highways assured us that the existing pits were okay to use. What I will do is to have a look before we raise it with Tara to see if there are any trees. I think of one in particular that has disappeared, actually. So I'll report back on that.
Okay.
I
think the big issue is the coast hopper, to be honest with you.
Yes.
So that money came in from an external funding source, I think. It was before my time, and it was for the branding of the coast hopper bus, which is no longer in service. I did go on the Jurassic Coast Hopper, the open top bus that runs between West Bay and Lyme Regis last weekend. And it is branded up, you know, the open top bus. Was that the bus that used to come into Exmouth? Was it one like that?
Yes, Sir Yashana, it was as Lisa said, it was the coast hopper. I can't remember, I think it started from Exeter and it went all the way through to Lyme Regis. It was branded as such. But it is, as I said before, very significant.
I mean, the only thought I've had is that we are still contributing towards the 99E service, which we contribute just shy of £10,000 a year to keep that night service running. And I just wonder if it would be acceptable to fire that money over and put it towards the night service, because then it is going on a transport initiative then.
Hmm. Well, Chair, if that was feasible, if it was allowed, I mean, the first thing in mind is that there were two objectives behind that grant. One was topic transport related, which I think we all want to support as fully as we could. The other, of course, it's part of our tourist attraction, as it were. It's good publicity for the Lyme Bay Coast. So there's another sort of objective contained within that. But because that amount really has been there in the project funds held whether that fund can be transferred. And I would be quite happy for it to be transferred to other services like the 99 that we support.
Okay, I'll make some inquiries.
Yeah. And then if it was for branding, I suppose it might be stretching a bit, but you could use it for some signage or some signboards to do with the Jurassic Coast as well.
I don't know where it came from. I just, because it was before my time.
It was during John Lucas's time.
Mm.
But I'll be happy to support what they
okay.
Say.
I will do some investigations and report back. Because it just seems silly that it's sitting there and nothing's happening with it.
Where the money came from and whether there were any sort of
restrictions
on,
yeah. Okay.
On how it could be spent, if you're able to investigate, Lisa. David.
Yeah, okay, I would support you. Be the public transport user myself, but also bear in mind we have been promised, not yet delivered, section 106 money for Plum Park for transport. So there's a possibility.
We wouldn't get the section 106 money for transport. That will go to the district council. So we only get, so actually we don't get any section 106 monies at all. We are consulted by the district council on how section 106 monies that are received for play, open space and sport are spent in the town. And it's our Section 106 Still Working Party that's consulted. But the money never comes into our bank account. It stays at the District Council. But we do have some say in where it's spent for those three spend areas. But if a Section 106 agreement's been negotiated for anything else, so, you know, South West Water, health, transport, anything like that, we won't have any input into that process whatsoever. Yeah, the SIL money comes our way, our share of the SIL, but Section 106 stays at district level. Yeah, so. Okay, I will do some homework on that before the next finance meeting, and then we can make some decisions. We might have to consult with our internal auditor and just see what they say, but okay.
Thanks. Okay. That concludes that one, I think. Actually, in terms of trees in Fair Park, I think possibly one of the ones that was planted by the schools may have died.
Okay.
Actually, the one that was planted by St. Joseph's was looking very sad when I went past the other day.
So we might be able to replace
so
that.
So we
okay.
might have to
yeah.
just
okay.
use it for that. Item 7 then is to receive and approve the statement of income and expenditure, go to budget and the payment lists, reconciliation of accounts against bank statements. I'm sure you've all been through this with a fine tooth comb. And are there any comments on that? And if not, do we have a proposer to receive those?
I happen to be acceptance.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah. Second over that? Yeah. I think we'll put Matt in as Matt and Steve simultaneously, but we can have seconded by Matt. Okay, all in favour? Okay, so that completes that one. So, grant applications.
Just to say on the bank reconciliations.
Yes.
Can we do what we did last time and get one of the councillors who comes into the office to check the bank statements against the reconciliation statement and sign it outside
yep.
of this meeting? Is that okay?
I've got copies here.
Oh, do you?
And,
yeah, unless anybody wants to do it after the meeting. It's just a case of checking the bank statement balances against our reconciliation report to make sure it reconciles to zero. That's all. So, yeah. Okay. All right, that would be helpful, and then we've got that on record.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. No, I'm happy to do that unless somebody else is trying to do it.
Were there any queries on the payments just before we move on to grants on the payment lists? No, because there's payment lists there for May, June, and July. There's 3 months worth of payment lists, but I think you probably recognise most of the payees. They're mostly ones that come up all the time.
Yeah.
Next month will be more interesting, I think, because there'll be more payments for festival performers on there that you might not recognise, but...
Yellow Dog comes up, and that's me. yeah, maybe it's the next time I'll have to.
Okay.
There was obviously quite a lot spent on the festival in the past month, and I presume we'll get a separate.
Yeah, so we're still posting. We're still posting payments, and we're still. Collecting receipts actually as well.
Yes.
So still money's coming in. So we can produce a mini set of accounts for the festival, and I know that there'll be a wash-up meeting. So it's pretty much on budget. There were a few extra costs associated with the security and things like that that came in at the last minute, but again, that's what we've got the reserves for. So yeah. We can provide a separate account for that.
Okay. Yeah. Anybody have any queries about anything? No, I didn't see anything really unusual there. Okay. We've voted on that, haven't we? So, item 8, grant applications. We only have the one tonight, and I think that's been quite extensively discussed by email, and I think we resolved by email that we would make a contribution towards the travel costs for their trip to the adrenaline quarry, but I think we decided we weren't going to grant the full amount. So the amount that has been put down there is £630. So if we're all in favour of that, 630, we need a proposal, second or a guess, if we have Steve and Cherry. Yeah, you propose a second? Happy to second?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so that's proposed by Steve, seconded by Cherry, all in favour. And that's unanimous. Okay. Right, item 9, to discuss the scope to introduce a light touch grant application scheme for small capital projects. Now, I'm intrigued by this, Lisa. So
this item was requested by Mark.
Well, thank you, Chair. I'll just explain this briefly. Steve also, I think, will remember. It was not an application that came through. It didn't reach that stage. It was more a request that I think at one stage was discussed with Steve and with myself. And it was a request from Holy Trinity Church to purchase a union flag to fly on their new flagpole. They had an existing St. George's flag with a diocesan crest, but they wanted a union flag to fly on national and local civic occasions as well. I advised the church warden who was heading this up to interrogate the council website and the protocol for grants, the process for grants, which they did. They found that the requirement for, let's say, audited accounts and numerous other types of information was really just too onerous for what was actually only £120. In fact, had that application been come to fruition, it couldn't have been considered anyway, because of our grants policy in not awarding grants directly to religious organisations. And in fact, I should declare an interest here that I'm a member of the Holy Trinity Congregation, and in fact the purchase of the Union flag was carried out through donation, so it bypassed our grants system altogether. But it occurred to me, then our, the application process that we apply to other organisations seems somewhat heavy-handed, to put it mildly. And I'm trying to think of some solution in this, because, for example, if a local group wanted, let's say, to purchase new camping equipment or something like that, which was would be a relatively small amount of money, probably not in excess of £500, and the flag was just an immediate and recent example. So I thought this was the appropriate place just to open this up for discussion. I have to say, I haven't got a firm proposal, Chairman, on this, but I just felt that as it stands, the application process, although really very fair, very robust, and very well tested over the years, it's perhaps a little too onerous for organisations which might be requesting a relatively small amount of money. And I just wondered whether other members of this committee had any views on this.
Can I just make one comment?
Yeah.
It's a slight correction insofar as it's not that our grants policy precludes us from making payments to religious organisations. It's that there is legislation in place that prohibits us from making payments specifically to Church of England, PCC controlled, because there's a conflict in the legislation between the PCC and parish councils or parish and town councils. So actually there's no restriction on us contributing to other faiths, it's just the Church of England. And it's specifically towards any building costs or costs associated with Church of England churches, but doesn't preclude us from supporting things like brownies or scouts or play groups that hold their activities in church buildings. It's just where we're being asked to fund directly Church of England projects or costs. So,
okay, Chairman, I'd like to thank these for clarifying that. And as it happened, the application wasn't proceeded with. But I raise it not in respect of that particular application, but in more general terms, if there were organisations, Brownies, Scouts, very good example, other uniformed organisations, Sea Scouts, for example, or Sea Cadets, might be looking for a relatively small grant that would make a difference. But I'll leave it to you, Chairman, to elicit what other members might think about this.
Okay.
Can I give some more background information as well?
Please
some
do.
Like, just for the benefit of Matt particularly.
Yeah.
So we did go through a sort of a fairly robust review of the grant scheme not so long ago. I want to say probably 3 years ago, when the application forms were strengthened with the aim of asking applicants to provide more supporting information. And that was partly as a result of age concern going into liquidation, because we'd previously given monies to Age Concern, and there were concerns expressed by the Finance Committee that actually we weren't being robust enough in asking for bank statements and due diligence documents. And we didn't end up losing any money with Age Concern, but we could have done, because we could have made a grant payment and then if they, you know, they then went into liquidation. So it was at that point that we strengthened all the application processes to ask for people to provide, you know, bank statements and all the other supporting information. The other thing I would say is that it's very unusual for us to get small grant requests. Now, I don't know whether that's because people are put off by, you know, the amount of work they have to do to request small amounts, or if it's just that, you know, most people will only approach us if they need more money. So our grant policy says that we will ordinarily we won't grant more than £1,500 to any single organisation under our grants policy, not under our service level agreement policy, but under our grants policy. And again, that's with the sort of the hope, I suppose, of managing expectations that we only normally budget £20,000 per year. And if, you know, you get one grant application in for 10, or, you know, we haven't got much left. So managing expectations, saying that we won't normally give more than £1,500. We know that we're going to be able to spread that over a number of organisations across the year. But it's unusual for us to get grant applications below 500, I would say. I can't remember the last one that we had below £500. So I don't know. I mean, I suppose what we could do is we could update the website and say something like, you know, if you need support for a very small capital project below £500, please contact me. And then I could sort of tease out, you know, what they're after. I mean, I said to you with the flag, my solution to the flag actually would have been to suggest that we just paid for it out of our civic budget. Yes. And that we hadn't, you know, we wouldn't, I mean, but I didn't have a conversation with anybody about it, but that's what I would have done. So, you know, I'm thinking as well, for example, Littleham in Bloom, they've approached us before about needing small amounts of money to buy bits and pieces for their projects up in Littleham. And we've covered that out of our public realm budget. You know, we've given them very small amounts of money. I mean, not a huge amount, £50 or something, you know, for some paint to do some planters. But we could signpost people to say, you know, if you've got a small project in mind, make contact with us, and, you know, we'll see what we can do to help. And then we might, on a case-by-case basis, be able to agree that we don't need all the paperwork that we normally request. Does that seem like a good idea? Because I don't think we should come up with new grant application forms. You know, I think that's too onerous, really. And there might not be a need for it. But if we say that the door's open, if people want to approach us, then we could take a view.
Cherry, you
have. Yeah, I have my reservations about. Is this about the people that wanted a flag to sit in the Strand with?
No.
No, this
is.
Yeah,
no. This is a flag. This is a flag to hang on the new Holy Trinity flagpole that's been put up. It's a union flag for Holy Trinity. So we have, you know, that we have a number of flags because
yeah.
We own all the flagpoles. So, as I say, my suggestion would have been that we bought a flag to add to our flag inventory, and we just lent it to them whenever they needed to fly the union flag, and it would, you know, it would be our flag, I suppose. But it's nothing to do with the people that wanted to sit in the Strand.
Yeah, the only thing is, where do you stop? It's only X number of pounds at the moment, but you have to treat every group wants to do something like this the same way. And that's going to amount to more than the amount that they want now.
I don't think we'll get very many inquiries, to be honest with you. I think it's
yeah, but
quite unusual.
It could be something else as well. I think once you start, once you open up the gate for an oddity, if you like, or the odd one,
well, that's
then
why I'm
suggesting
that we don't create a separate grant policy, but we put some sort of wording on the website to indicate that if people have got small capital projects that they need support for, you know, that they can contact me for information about the grant application process. And then, you know, we get sort of advance warning, if you like, of something. And then if I felt it was something that I thought, you know, members might support, we could agree whether we want to see all the normal due diligence documentation, or if we're happy to just take a light touch approach to it. They still have to fill out an application form, but we could relieve them of, you know, having to supply all the supporting paperwork. I don't think we will get very many
Famous ones.
Yes, but if you look at the grant applications that we get, most organisations are looking for more than that. I think that's probably the exception rather than the norm.
Yeah, well, thanks for raising that, Mark. But yeah, I agree with what you said, Lisa. I'd be happy to propose what you've said. And bearing in mind that we judge every application on its merit. And as you say, we may not get very many, but if we do get some, it's been nice to be able to have smaller organisations. So I'd be happy to propose that recommendation.
David?
Thanks, Jerry. I agree with what Mark and Lisa have said. I think we need small grants, we need a bit more nimble. I think what's put people off is not just the application, it's the 3 or 4 months delay before it actually gets through the system. I'm the trustee of a national charity, speaking of grants, and what we do is we review at our regular meetings, but in the meantime we take certain things by email to see whether they get a majority response, the trustees to take a particular action. Some of the monies we have to give out basically emergency funds, we have to get them out quickly. And I'm just wondering whether we can think of doing that as well for small grants.
So I do that. I mean, that's why the Hive application, because I knew that their trip to the Adrenaline Quarry needed a decision before tonight's meeting. So I will do that if an application comes in and it's time sensitive. But I mean, we don't get very many requests for small amounts of money in between finance meetings. So. That's why I think if we just put a broad statement on the website that says that, you know, if people want advice or that, you know, they want to discuss small projects to get in contact, then we're inviting them to have a conversation. And then if we need to correspond by email in between the finance committee meeting, we can do what we did with the Hive.
Suggestion as well. I mean, I was going to suggest, but in the interest of transparency, it might be easier just have a kind of stripped down application form for small.
trouble is, it is still, it does still come under Section 137 legislation.
Yeah.
I mean, actually,
yeah.
you know, we are not empowered to give money to charities and you know, give grants under any circumstances other than Section 137.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislation says that we need to be able to demonstrate that the money that we give, the benefits that are then derived, are commensurate with the amounts we've given, and that there's a due diligence process in place. So, you know, part of that due diligence as well in meeting the requirements of Section 137 is that we do check that the money that we're giving, you know, is going to be proportionately used for the benefit of the town people. And that's why we don't accept grants from organisations that are outside the town, because it has to benefit our community. So there is actually a limit on Section 137 on what you can spend on grants. We're nowhere near, you know, we're nowhere near that limit. It's £8 something per elector this year, which, you know, in a town the size of Exmouth gives us a big leeway. But of course, also it does come out of our budgeted funds. That legislation, although it gives us the power to make the grants, it doesn't give us the extra money. We still have to budget to pay it out of our precept. So on balance, I don't think we've got it too wrong, but I take your point about small organisations. I mean, what was interesting was when we ran the community fund, remember we had the district council had some funding that came from the new homes bonus funds, and they agreed that they were going to use Exmouth as a pilot town to run a Dragon's Den style grant making scheme, and we had about £20,000 from the New Homes Bonus panel, and over two consecutive years we ran a one-off grant scheme, and we called it a Dragon's Den scheme, and we invited members of the community to come in and vote, and we had a panel of dragons, and the organisations had to present their grants, and we did that twice. And even then, we weren't inundated with low-level grant applications. People were mostly asking for £1,000 or more. So, I don't know, maybe it's just the nature of, you know, what people are looking for help for. But let's just review it. I mean, we can keep an eye. If I update the website with some wording that says, you know, we're happy to talk to people about their grant needs, and then let's just see what comes forward. I mean, I know that David's supported one particular applicant with an application form, haven't you, in the past? So I know that help is there amongst members. So.
Okay. I think, I mean, normally if you're applying to any organisation for grants, you usually expect that you're going to have to go through quite a lot of paperwork, and I think in fact, ours is already fairly light touch from what I've gathered. I've never actually done one myself, but from what I've gathered from other people, applying for grants and things like the lottery can be quite onerous, actually. So I think it's right that we expect those things, and asking for copies of bank statements and ensuring that they are or at least asking what kind of organisation they are and how many people they benefit. I don't think that's asking an awful lot of them. And I think probably people have to be prepared to go through those hoops, but, you know, putting something that says, you know, if you find you need help with the process, do approach Lisa, and Lisa could always pass it on to the ward councillor if she felt that was an appropriate route to go. Okay, so we have a proposal from Steve that we just put some wording on the website, and I think it was to say that contact town clerk if you need to talk through your requirements or you know you need help with completing the application form, something like that.
Yep.
Okay, and that's been seconded by Mark, so in favour of that? Okay, and that's unanimous. Okay, thank you, Mark, for raising that, because it is relevant and it's good to review our application process.
Well, can I just say thanks to Lisa for doing some thinking about
It may be. I mean, we don't actively promote that we've got the grant fund. Some years it's, you know, it's over, there's lots of interest, and other years there's less. I don't know. I mean, we could see how much we've got left in the pot, you know, at the end of August, and perhaps put out a press release to say that we've got funds available for local organisations. We've still got money left in the budget, and see what comes forward.
Might be fun to do another Dragon's Den type application process.
A lot of work for Chetna, that was.
Okay.
A lot of work.
Okay, just shelve that one. Okay, moving on quickly to item 10 then. To agree to invest a further £317,458.26 received by the Town Council as SIL receipts, and that will go into the CCLA Public Sector Deposit Fund. Just shows how much building's going on, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I was talking to one of the district councillors today who's doing a little bit of work on SIL and Section 106. I mean, we've received £1,000 in SIL receipts in total.
How much?
£1 million.
So you've got a name on the plan.
Yeah, so that's 25% of the receipts for Exmouth. So we've invested all of the SIL money that we haven't spent so far, which is just over 600. We've invested that in the Public Sector Deposit Fund already. But in May we had another payment made to us for £317,000. We're getting really good interest on the Public Sector Deposit Fund at the moment. We're getting over £3,000 a month, aren't we, in interest? So rather than having it sitting around in a bank account that's doing nothing, I'm really asking for approval for us to put that £317,000 into the Public Sector Deposit Fund until such times as, you know, the council decides what they want to spend it on. Of the SIL receipts that we've received so far, we've obviously committed quite a lot. Although it's still sat in our deposit fund, we have committed £400,000 to the Dean Elm Way extension. That's covered by a legal agreement. And we have committed, in principle, £200,000 to the Bapton Valley Park improvements. So we've actually allocated pretty much all of the receipts that we received, apart from this £317,000 that's come in most recently. And we'll have 5 years in which to spend that. So with the Public Sector Deposit Fund, our bank account only allows us to transfer a maximum of £50,000 per day. So we'll have to do this in £50,000 tranches over seven payments or so. But we can get access to the money within 24 hours. So paying in, we're constrained by how much our banking with Barclays allows us to transfer out. But if we needed to get hold of that money in a hurry, we can get it paid back in from the Public Sector Deposit Fund because it's a cash fund. It's not a long-term investment fund. We can get that back very quickly. But it does mean that it'll be doing a little bit of work for us. And I don't think, you know, £3,500 a month is to be sniffed at. I think that's, you know, something else that we can do something.
It would take you up to about £4,750 if I calculate correctly.
So.
And is that interest, is that credited to the SIL?
No, it comes, well it comes, so it comes in, it just comes into general funds, yes.
I think we had a similar question asked at East Devon the other night, didn't we, where a councillor asked how much were we holding in SIL receipts on behalf of town and parish councils and how much interest was that earning, and they said, well, we can't separate it out because the interest we earn on that.
So with the Public Sector Deposit Fund, there's £200,000 of our general reserves is in the Public Sector Deposit Fund, and then the balance is our SIL receipts. So it's only those two things that are in there. We've kept it quite discreet like that so that we know that it's just SIL money and our general reserves. General reserves, we just need to keep there in the background. They're for there for, you know, emergencies. The SIL money, we've kept it at a quantifiable amount so that it doesn't get confusing about what pots of money we've got where, because it will get confusing otherwise. So that interest gets paid back into our bank account on a monthly basis.
Okay.
And it's just recorded as administration income. So.
Do we have a proposer then? Thank you, Matt.
I have a sideways question.
Yeah, go ahead.
As you mentioned, Selwyn neighbourhood plan.
Yeah.
Next April, our neighbourhood plan is 5 years old.
It was adopted. It was adopted in 2019. Yes.
Then doesn't it cease to be 100% invalid, and will we lose the extra percentage that we get?
I'm not aware that we will lose the extra percentage, but we are thinking about the work that we need to update it. I was aware that the SIL receipts have a 5-year time limit, so we have to spend the SIL receipts within 5 years. I wasn't aware that if our neighbourhood plan reaches a 5-year anniversary that we no longer qualify for the SIL receipts.
You're supposed to review the policies every 2 years.
Yes.
And you're supposed to review the actual plan itself every 5 years.
So the policies have been reviewed, because we do an annual report where we look at the efficacy of the policies. Obviously, at the moment, we're in this strange situation where we don't want to do too much work on it whilst there's an emerging local plan.
Yeah.
But we are starting to think about some preparatory work we can do around housing needs and things like that, to feed into an update of the neighbourhood plan. But I don't think we would look to refresh it unless you tell us that. Well, I'll investigate. If the SIL receipts are at risk, then that might be a push that we need to do it. But
you know, as a conversation I've had with some, I mean, I'm qualified and know how to do local plans.
Yes.
And how to create them. I don't know the question about the SIL money, hence why I was asking.
Yes.
Because the amount that we're talking about transferring here, you know, if we start losing that top up for having that neighbourhood plan, that's quite a lot of money that's lost.
Mm.
And I think we just need to be aware of that and to double check that we don't
I'll check. Yeah. There have been several conversations around the need for us to refresh the neighbourhood plan, but it's how that fits in with the emerging local plan at the district council level.
Yeah.
And also the contentious thing about housing land allocations. So I've just started an application form for some locality funding to assist with a housing needs assessment for Exmouth to help us look at, you know, housing land allocations, either as part of the local plan process or if we want to allocate land in the refreshed neighbourhood plan. So there is some work going on in the background, but I wasn't aware that there was a potential risk of us not getting the full 25% when it reached its fifth birthday.
It's just worth checking.
Yeah, we'll do. Mm. Okay, thank you very much.
Does our neighbourhood plan have an end date?
Well, it was adopted to run concurrently with the existing local plan at East Devon. So it was supposed to go through to 2031, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was the intention. I think in the Neighbourhood Plan Steering Group, I think they are, especially, you know, Ian Cann and Roy, I think they're quite disturbed by the fact, actually, that we're already having to look at a refresh, because they thought that it was going to, you know, have a useful shelf life through to 2031, and of course that's not the case.
No, it's the same with local plans. I mean, that's why we're reviewing it now, because you have to.
But we've done one fairly robust review in the 4 years since it was adopted, where we looked at the usefulness of the policies and where the policies were failing, where they weren't quite meeting expectations. I could share that with you. It was an annual report, and again, I've started work on doing another one, but I haven't made great inroads to it yet. You're looking at employment land and, you know, that sort of thing. So, Yeah, okay, I will investigate further, thank you.
In the meantime, shall we deposit our SIL receipts in the CCLA Public Sector Deposit Fund? Then we have a proposal for that.
Yeah.
Are you happy to help to propose? Yes. I think Mark was
second.
Either proposing or seconding.
I'm impressed with the amount of interest.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I'm happy to propose or second whichever.
Okay. Yep. And everyone's in agreement?
All in favour then? Yeah.
Okay, that's lovely. Thank you.
Okay, and that's it. Brings our meeting to an end.